Okay, then we'll call the meeting for Monday, April 8th. Plan Commission to work. And could you do the roll call, David?
Yes. Chairman Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Rodman?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
And Commissioner Tuttle is excused.
Okay. Thank you, David. This is time we set aside for comments from citizens. Don't see any citizens. So we'll move on to approval of minutes, March 25th minutes. Commissioners, since I wasn't here, I have nothing to do with it. Commissioner Hemmer.
A couple of questions. First off, on page 204, the fourth item down, Manager Sack leaves the city of Zero Proposal County except for the installation of road improvements. And this was with regard to development inside UGA but outside the city limits. And wasn't that statement in the context of the utility improvements? Because we don't have any control over the road improvements, do we, Brad?
Mm-mm.
So that statement to me doesn't seem to be accurate. Other commissioners have any?
I thought he was talking about the road improvements matching what would be built if a project were built under city standards under future annexation. Somehow they match the two.
And they thought it was, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
The city has no control over that.
But the city would have some potential input trying to match up the improvements.
Yeah, I mean, we have input on all sorts of things. I mean, because SEPA will come out, we can do SEPA comments and things like that. But it's like control.
And I remember Jeff emphasizing the word, the zero control in the discussion. But I think he, there certainly wasn't an exception for road improvements in his comment. So I think that we either need to strike it or just maybe put a period after county. And I suspect that would be much more accurate, that we would have zero control.
Is it truly zero control?
Yeah.
We would control potentially utilities.
Then
it's really not the road improvements.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just a strike in its entirety.
That'd be fine with me. The other question I had, or actually I'd like to clarify a little bit, on page 304, where Commissioner Rodman made the move to approve the findings and conclusions, and the reasons for my opposition. It says that I was opposed due to changes in the scenic vista portion of the code. I think that in itself is just a little misleading, but I think it would be more realistic and accurate to say that I was opposed due to questions with regard to the scenic vista portion of the code that we hadn't had a chance to address, and remaining concerns over sign height, which I think is quite different than what the minutes in and of themselves say. Did any other commissioners have any recollections on that?
That's what I was looking at too. I thought that you were having more concerns about the other, not just what you're saying. I agree with what you're thinking.
Thank you. So if the minutes could be more reflective of that, I would certainly be then able to support it.
And I apologize, I wasn't actually at the meeting, but I did listen to the tape three times and did the minutes from that, and then gave them to Kim Shaw to edit for me, so she did the final edits.
Those are all those are the concerns that I have.
Okay. Commissioners?
I hear you're really concerned. I'll make, you have to make a motion.
Okay.
Second. Can I make the motion? The motion to approve
this. I'm still looking at the minutes. Where are we?
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes of March 25th, 2013, with the changes and or corrections as noted in the discussion preceding the motion.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood.
Yes.
Any more discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved with said changes. Okay. Next on the agenda, we have workshop. Since we have no public hearing, we have workshop. We're going to do the sewer system first.
Sure, since it's safe.
Okay. Chapter 13.08. Brent?
Okay, thank you. This is a proposal to modify the Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 13.08 to provide for the sanitary sewer service area of the city of Monroe to be the entire urban growth area rather than just the city limits as it is right now. This change is needed for a couple of reasons. One is the current regulations, which allow the provision of sewer outside the city limits with permission of the city council, is conditioned upon conditions, development regulations to match the inside city regulations, which was determined to be unenforceable by a court case of MT Development versus the city of Renton in 2007. The city did adopt an interim ordinance in 2008 that prohibited the extension of sewer outside the city limits. That expired, that was adopted as an interim regulation that expired in 2010. Since that time, the regulations have been that we have on the books currently have been unenforceable. So to clean that up, and then the second reason is with the failure of the annexation attempt at Roosevelt Ridge to bring that portion of the urban growth area to the city limits, failed substantially, by a substantial margin, the ability of the urban growth area to absorb the projected population that is distributed amongst the areas in the county comes into question. So in order to allow the area to develop to the zoning density that's allowed by this Snohomish County, it would be necessary for the city to provide sewer services outside, so they wouldn't have to build at larger densities to allow for on-site septic systems. This was sent to the Planning Commission on February 12th by the Monroe City Council with a request for decision from the Planning Commission to be presented to the council at the April 16th meeting. This was presented to you on February 25th. You held a public hearing on March 25th. There was no substantive comments received at the public hearing. Following the public hearing, you had some questions, mostly revolving around the density in the county and the city and the lot size differences that were possible in the two different areas, whether or not it was inside city limits or developed as an unincorporated portion of the urban growth area. If you look on the second page of the cover sheet, you can see the differences in the zoning classifications of all the property that's in the urban growth area that's not currently within the city limits. There are 634 acres. The county has 26 acres zoned R20,000, 424 acres zoned R9600, 165 acres zoned R72, and 19 acres zoned LDMR. If you look back a ways after the proposed code, the last piece of paper in that workshop, there's a map showing the zoning of the unincorporated urban growth area.
Brad, where's the LDMO?
LDMO is, southwest corner. If things were annexed into the city, there would be 506 acres of 9600 and 120 acres of R6000. The lot size is pretty self-explanatory. It's the number afterwards, except for LDMR, which is a 7,200 square foot lot size. If the area is developed by a PRD in the city, the minimum lot size for 9600 is 6,000 square feet, and for 6,000 is 3,700 square feet. Snohomish County does not have minimum lot sizes for PRDs or planned residential developments. However, they do have setback requirements and a lot coverage requirement, so that you can't build an infinite number of lots, but you can't have more from the city if you go for very small house sizes. The last table I have on the cover sheet assumes that you have lot size or houses that are market driven, so that the houses that would be built in unincorporated UGA versus incorporated UGA would be similar. So in that, running those numbers, it's probable on a 20-acre piece of property with 5 acres of wetlands with 2,200 square feet of lot coverage, you get 113 lots in unincorporated Snohomish County and 119 lots if it was incorporated into the city limits. So it's probably not going to, it's out in the county, have a whole bunch more lots than would be out there if it was annexed to the city. It is, of course, possible that if they built 200 square foot houses, they could get more lots, but that doesn't seem very likely that that would be a marketable commodity that someone would try to develop. I've also prepared the staff report, which is, no, where did I do that? There it is back there. Just after the map. Is a staff report with findings and conclusions and a recommendation from staff that the Planning Commission forward a recommendation to the City Council to approve CA 2013-01 sewer system regulations. And I have noticed that in the finding 4 and 5, the conclusions are switched, and there needs to be the word complies in front of chapter 21.50 MMC. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Commissioners, any questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner.
Brad, the last table that you talked about.
Yes.
At the bottom there. The county doesn't have a zoning district of R6000.
Right. If you change it to 7200, it's 145 lots would be the maximum.
So 7200, 174 would become 145?
145, yes.
And then the 113 that you got to, how do you achieve that?
Take 2,200 square feet of lot coverage divided by 55% lot coverage allowed by the county gives you a 4,000 square foot lot, and divide that into 15 acres, divide that into 12 acres, because if there's 15 acres that's not critical areas, you take out about 20% for roads, detention ponds, that kind of stuff. And that leaves you 12 acres of developable property.
I know that's a requirement in our code that we calculate density after taking the 20% out.
Yes.
It's also a requirement in county.
No, that's not a calculation of density. That's what I have here is a calculation of yield. So you can't put lots on the roads. So you take the road out.
Right.
So you only have 12 acres of developable property. And you put 4,000 square foot lots on that, you get 113.
But there's nothing that says that they would have to put 4,000 square foot lots on it.
If they're marketing the same houses. Because if you have a 2,200 square foot footprint, that can only be 55% of the lot. So that yields a 4,000 square foot lot.
So, but a 2,200 square foot house that's a two-story won't have a 2,200 square foot footprint.
Right.
So could you not do a 2,200 square foot house that's two-story on a smaller lot?
Right. This is footprint of lot. This is footprint of house, not square footage of house.
So the footprint was 2,200 square feet?
Yes, 2,200 square feet of lot coverage.
Which would typically probably be about 400 square feet of garage, mm-hmm, and 1,800 square foot first floor footprint.
Right. Actually, 400 square feet of driveway. 400 okay. square feet of garage and 1,400 square foot of first floor.
Okay. So I know that we've seen a lot of developments in the county that have gone to smaller lots. Mm-hmm. And the city of Monroe certainly has historically, in the areas outside the urban core, trying to stay away from that, as evidenced by our minimum lot size requirements that we have in code.
About 3,700 square feet.
In the UR 6,000 right. zone. And some other number in the 9,600 zone.
6,000.
R4 zone. Aren't we truly opening the door? Isn't the city opening the door to a different sort of development than the city's envision for this community?
It's basically developer-driven. So what is being proposed to be constructed around this area is about 2,200 square feet of lot coverage, which then leads you to a 4,000 square foot lot out in the county, which leads to that many lots. So like I mentioned earlier, if somebody can start building 200 square foot houses, they can put a whole lot more on there.
And they haven't been able to do that in the city of Monroe.
Right.
Because our code will not allow it.
Right.
But again, if there's no minimum requirement in the county, they could.
They could, yes, they could.
And the market may dictate that. I'll let my fellow commissioner refer to the market if he chooses, because he likes to do that. I think that to me it would be a concern, and I know it's not my place to set policy here. Mm-hmm. That's a council decision. But I think we are opening the door to a different sort of development than this city has, at least in the past, envisioned. Mm-hmm. And that's the way the city wants to go. So that's all I have for now.
Commissioner.
Usually in the county, the LBMR zone is the one where things get a little askance, because what they do is they assign a certain unit count to a given piece of property, and then they allow the developer to put those units on that piece of property pretty much in any configuration they wish. Mm-hmm. The market is certainly moving, and I know that, for instance, D.R. Horton voluntarily reduced lot count on the plat in Lake Stevens to increase lot sizes. And I think that the market is definitely moving away from these really small lots. And that's because people just are not that interested in them anymore. So I don't see that as being a real danger. And I'm not sure that their code outside of the LDMR zone supports their ability to get lots, a lot of lots in a plat that small.
Any other comments?
In the code itself, it's the second to last page about user rates, and it's talking about the monthly rates and charges of the disposal system outside the city will be 200% of the appropriate in-city charge. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's always been? Or is this something that you're thinking about adding it?
No, that's what it currently is.
That's what it currently
yes.
is.
Yes. Only the red stuff is changes.
Okay. So my question is, at a rate like that, are we encouraging the developer not to use our sewer systems and encouraging them to use septic systems instead by that type of a rate?
No, because it's, the developer doesn't pay that.
The people that buy the homes pay that. That would make me, because when we moved into Monroe, one of the things I checked when we bought the house was, what are the rates? And to see that this would be 200% above what they pay in the city would make me think twice about buying or building something there, because that just adds on more. And just a question that I've had, I noticed that I'm going, wow, that seems to be a little steep.
Commissioner Demers?
That brings me back to one we talked about last week, and that was that ability of the city to force connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that if the septic system fails and they're within so many feet, they may have to, and I believe that's actually under state law, isn't it?
That's actually a health district regulation.
Health district regulation.
Yeah.
But if they happen to have a functioning septic system, and the sewer happens to go by them now, the city as I recall, has the ability to force them to connect.
Only if they're inside city limits.
And so we were clear on that then.
Yes.
Okay. So if the developer has to run a sewer line up past properties within the city limits, those properties in turn then could be forced to connect.
Yes, they could.
That's a little onerous, isn't it?
That's probably why the city's never enforced that part of the code.
Because they haven't doesn't mean they might not.
Doesn't mean they can't.
All right, thank you.
If once it's developed, once people move in, I'm sure they're going to request to be annexed to get the prices down to what it's reasonable.
So if they are annexed, that does bring the prices down to it, and they'll be coming
yes.
to the city limits and the
budget. Right. Currently, rates inside the city are half of what rates are outside the city for sanitary sewer.
Okay. Anything else, commissioners?
Yes.
Commissioner Sherwood?
At the last time we discussed this, I had asked about the excessiveness of the charges, especially for sanitary sewer outside the city limits. And the language in the code justifying that seemed very weak. Is there discretion on the part of the city council to change that? What sort of action would it take to change that? Or is that a de facto incentive to annex or to get lower utility rates?
Could be a de facto incentive, but there's nothing that says that they have to charge twice as much.
So that, what type of process would be involved in making change to that doubling of the sewer rate?
City Council would change that portion of the code.
So that would be a reasonably simple action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Well, I don't have any more questions on that. Commissioners, we have a recommendation before us. How do you want to handle it?
Chairman, are we ready for a motion?
Yes, we are.
I would like to make a motion to forward a recommendation of approval of proposed amendments to Chapter 13.08 of the Monroe Municipal Code based on the attached findings and conclusions to the City Council.
And we have a motion by Commissioner Sherwood.
Second.
To approve. Seconded by Commissioner Rodland. Any discussion? Any more discussion? Commissioner Demarest.
Mr. Chairman, I will vote in support of this, but I'm doing so with some reservations. Three in particular. One, I'm very concerned about what door may be being open to future development as far as development that may or may not be consistent with the city's comprehensive plan and what the city has at least to state desired to see in the way of residential development. I also, and I realize it's not our place to determine the policy, but I am concerned with, and to borrow a phrase from 2 weeks ago, that concept of annexation by utility, I think it was, where the utility fees are being used, one might say, as a hammer or leverage to try to encourage ultimate annexation. And then also a concern over the aspect of forced annexations on residents in the city who may have a perfectly good functioning septic system, and yet now that there's a sewer line crossing their property, fronting their property, the city can have the ability, does have the ability to force connection. That said, I think that the potential benefit of development occurring at more urban density in the UGA outweighs the reservations, so that's supporting my vote. I hope we don't look back down the road with regret.
I'd like to say I agree with the Commissioner Demarest's reservations about forced connection and with the arm bending on annexation with the cost. I have a reservation on that, but I also will support the recommendation.
And I too do agree with Mr. Demarest. I think any kind of forced annexation because of you want lower utility rates, I think is wrong. But I do understand that we need to have code in place that we can actually enforce. So I will be supporting this.
Okay. So we have a motion, we have a second. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor for this recommendation, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carried. Thank you, Commissioner. All right, next agenda item is the Stormwater Management, MMC Chapter 15.41.
First, let me introduce you to Scott Peterson, Senior Engineer, who will be shepherding this item through the Planning Commission in the month of May, since I won't be here. So he came, so he knows what I'm talking about. So I'll know what your questions are to answer them for next time.
And your name again was?
Scott Peterson.
Scott. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the Washington State Department of Washington State Department of Ecology has a stormwater manual that they encourage local jurisdictions to use for the development of property inside their jurisdictions for how to handle stormwater runoff. Their first manual came out in 1991, and the city adopted that manual in 1994 and said current editions of that manual. So since then, the manual has been updated in 2005 and most recently in August of 2012. Since the first manual came out, we've also come under the jurisdiction of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 2 Stormwater Permit for Western Washington, which has slightly different requirements than the Stormwater Manual, even though they're both written by the same organization. They don't match. So when we say that we've adopted the 2012 Stormwater Manual by reference, it doesn't match what the requirements of the current NPDES Phase 2 Stormwater Permit are. It's much more restrictive for development, and it's also currently impossible to comply with because the software that they recommend that people use to design their stormwater management systems doesn't exist yet. but the Department of Ecology in the NPDES permit doesn't require it to be adopted until 2016. So hopefully in the next 3 years they will have worked the bugs out of it and people will be able to design to it. However, we have a little problem in our code because we've adopted the most current edition. So in order to correct that, the changes that are included in the packet are suggested. So we take out the reference to adopting the Western Washington Stormwater Manual, and instead replace it with the language that's included in the NPDES Phase 2 stormwater permit, which basically says there are certain criteria that people have to meet and certain minimum requirements, and then it references the 2005 manual currently, and then by 2016, we will have another amendment that will, at that time, adopt the 2012 manual or whatever the Department of Ecology has decided they need to use at that time. This was directed to the Planning Commission by the City Council on April 2nd. We're scheduled for a public hearing on May 13th with a recommendation from the Planning Commission to the City Council on May 27th, and then the City Council will consider your recommendation on June 10th. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Commissioner Demarest?
Brad, you said we took out the old and replaced it with the new. Where exactly did we do that?
The new stuff starts first page.
In the definitions.
Actually, exemptions is the first thing that's in the permit. So it's exemptions, then definitions.
Okay.
And that goes on for a while, and a while, and a while. And then a couple of the definitions have been changed because the current definitions in the code have been changed by the permit language. That's such a site has been changed, and source control DMP have been changed.
Okay, so, and this body of work is called, again, the what do you call it?
The NPDES Phase 2 Stormwater Permit for Western Washington, Appendix 1.
Thank you. That was really good. Do we specifically reference that somewhere in here?
No, we don't, because you don't adopt, we're not adopting the appendix, we're amending our regulations to comply with the appendix, because the appendix is written in the form of the permittee shall, okay, do things like that. So we've changed the permittee shall to say that, to in the code to say the City of Monroe requires applicants to do this.
What if the requirements of the appendix change? Does that mean we have to go back and change this ordinance?
Yes.
And is that good or bad?
It probably would be preferable not to have to do it, but the way the permit is written, you sort of are forced to do it, because that's what's expected by the permit, because actually the permit says the city shall adopt by this date. So we'll have to do one now, because we're catching up from the 2007 to 2012 permit, which they extended for 1 year, because the current permit we're under is good for 2012 and 2013. We'll have to come back to you and adopt the 2017 permit requirements in 2016. And then hopefully, if things keep going that way, every 5 years, when the new permit comes out, we'll go through this process and adopt the new regulations.
And I can see where 5 years is a manageable time frame. But is there much likelihood that they may change it more frequently than that?
No, because that's basically how the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System is set up. It's a 5-year cycle that comes from the EPA, and the wastewater treatment plant has had an NPDES permit for a long time, since the 70s, and there it's a 5-year cycle.
And that applies both to existing permits and potential permits?
What do you mean by permits?
Well,
because there's the permit that we get, which is a 5-year permit for the operations of our municipal separate stormwater system. And that's not a permit that someone is getting who, you know, is building something.
Okay, so I'm talking about the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 2 Stormwater Permit.
Right. That comes out every 5 years.
Yes. Okay. And so the requirements of that permit don't change any more often than 5 years.
Correct.
Even for new proposals. I think I hear you say that, for instance, an existing permit can be required to be updated every 5 years. There's a cycle.
That's the NPDES permit, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
But if all of a sudden a brand new proposal comes about a few years from now, is it possible that between when we've adopted this and that say, 3 years out, that the requirements of that permit might have changed, of a new permit?
Very unlikely.
Okay. So they're not necessarily locked into a five-year cycle as far as drafting of requirements and adopting of requirements. They are locked into a five-year cycle on requiring updating of existing permits.
They issue a new permit. Your permit is good for 5 years to operate a stormwater system.
So,
and every 5 years,
okay,
they update that and get a new permit and then record in the court.
I think we're saying the same.
Okay.
Commissioner, here. This smacks and stinks of job security.
I was going to say the same thing.
This is just hideous. Do we have... The reason this bothers me so much is that a lot that used to cost $20,000, when they come out with the new regulations, becomes $40,000, and then it becomes $60,000. And a lot of the cost, I've talked to the developers, is in this crap. So my question, one of the questions I have is, do we have any local hard data science with which you're familiar, which says that what we're doing now doesn't work well enough?
No.
So they're just going to keep shoving this down our throats. Mm-hmm. If I understand this correctly, this is a recommendation. Can the city write its own regulations in regards to stormwater, or does it have to come from on high?
The city can write their own regulations, but it has to be approved from on high.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you vary too much, they're not gonna say okay.
I got what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So based on, and I can speak to Mr. Peterson, right?
Yes, you can.
Okay. both of you gentlemen, in at least what you know so far about the new stuff that can't be enforced because we don't have the software, does it amount to a hill of beans difference between what we already have?
Yes.
In what way?
What we're doing right now is adopting the old stuff, or the middle stuff, because we've adopted the old stuff. Now we're adopting the middle stuff, so that when the after August, actually after September 1st, we're no longer able to adopt the old manual, and we're locked into the 2012 manual, which from anecdotal conversations with developers or engineers, their comment on the new regulations that is the next batch, we're kind of adopting the 2005 ones right here, the 2012 ones. His comment was, on a 5-acre plat or subdivision, develop 5 acres, 3 acres will be a stormwater retention pond.
So, the subdivision applications that have come in recently, mm-hmm, have been provided with stormwater retention, mm-hmm, facilities under
2005.
Under 2005.
Yes.
And we have no evidence to believe that those facilities will be ineffective.
Except for that one.
Except for the one that's 3 inches from the top.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is just nuts and bolts.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
A certain amount of area, you have a certain permeability of the soils, you have a certain area that's just going to shed 100% of the water that falls on it, etc. All that stuff.
Right.
I used to do some modeling back in the day, and I think I understand how it works.
Right.
How much of what comes out of the sky is going to end up going in the pond?
So it's basically, it's more regional rather than local, is what the projection from Department of Ecology is, that this is to save salmon in the big rivers and the whales in Puget Sound.
So when these... aliens who write this stuff.
engineers, I think they're called.
Oh, I'm sure they're planners.
Is there the application of an environmental impact statement or some
Yeah, you know, because one of the new EIS things is, you know, an economic look. Mm-hmm. If we do this alternative, it's going to cost so much money that nobody can afford it. If we comply with this idiocy, then all of the goals we have of putting a certain number of people inside the urban growth area will become physically impossible because the houses will be 6 feet wide and 40 feet long and everything else is going to be a storm drainage problem. Mm-hmm. Do you see that on the horizon as being a real possibility if the people are telling you that 60% of the site has to be dedicated to storm drainage? That's just pure idiocy.
Right. That's one of the good things about not adopting the new manual until 2016. Hopefully they'll tweak it a little bit before then. The other one is that they're really interested in infiltration, on-site infiltration, which is okay in some places, not here, because if you're up on top of the hill, you have your lodgement till very close underneath the surface, so if you try to infiltrate, it infiltrates, but it kind of runs over 20 feet and pops up in somebody's crawl space, which isn't a good thing. And then the other one is down here in the valley, the water table's too high, so you can't have your separation distances. So that's the problem with development here. If you have some place that's got a low water table with lots of sand, it works great, and you don't have to do, you know, there's no need to do any stormwater facility on your site because it all just soaks right in. So that's what hopefully will be happening during the next 3 years. There'll be some attention paid to that in these places that you can't do infiltration, there's a little bit of more exceptions to the rules.
So the prospect is that this can be staved off for several more years.
Right. The new regulations by the current permit don't have to be adopted until 2016, and there is quite a push amongst local jurisdictions and developers to modify the requirements that what needs to be adopted in 2016.
Is there the capacity within the system of coming to grips with these regulations that they will actually accept feedback from other human beings who say, this might be nice in theory, but it's going to cost us so much money that it really is impractical economically? Is there a process for that?
Yes, they have been receiving comments, and they just got a whole earful of comments the other day that they went to. some people from our staff went to, too, and, you know, it was very clear to them that people were not in favor of this, but whether or not that changes them, we don't know.
You have to go through like Olympia, don't you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Demarest?
So, Brad, I guess I'm a little confused. Mm-hmm. You're talking about 2016. So what we're adopting here won't be effective until 2016?
No, this will be effective because this is adopting basically the 2005 manual.
The 2005, okay. Thank you. And this is not something that is open to policy positions or interpretation. From what I understand,
no.
Our only flexibility on something like this would be to be more restrictive.
Right.
We don't have the ability to be less restrictive.
Right.
So wish all you wish and want, we can't change it.
Yeah. What we're doing right now is doing it so that the 2012 manual is not in effect right now.
Okay.
That's what this change does.
So it's either lose what we have currently and be forced to the more stringent one, or go to this for a compromise position while the process maybe works itself out and something else comes forward.
Right.
If I might draw your attention to page 4, definition of effective impervious surface. On the third line, the word ineffective, I think, should be effective.
Impervious surface?
If not, maybe you could explain just real quickly why the word ineffective is there. So it would be basically the second sentence seems to be nonsensical.
First word, third sentence.
Page what?
Page four.
Page four. Yeah. Oh, effective impervious surface. Better connection with sheet flow descriptions have impervious or some residential elements which are ineffective.
It sounds like they would be effective if they're dispersed. They would be ineffective if they weren't dispersed.
Yeah. The reason that is because that's what the permit language says.
Oh, okay.
So,
so you just brought it.
Cut and paste, yeah.
Okay.
So we will look into that. And
okay.
I've noticed a couple other errors in their typing, so.
Mr. Demarest?
The only other comment I have, and Brad, it goes back to what we talked a little bit about before the meeting, and I understand your comment about the long section following minimum requirement number two, mm-hmm. before we got to minimum requirement number three. But certainly as a, now recognizing that most users of this will be far from lay persons when it comes to this stuff, I don't know whether something can be done formatting-wise just to make it a little more user-friendly as far as understanding what's going on there. And it may be that it's my perception is being compounded by all the underscoring, and that perhaps when that is gone, it will be a little bit more clear. But that long section following minimum requirement number two before you get to number three, 6 pages later,
yeah.
To me, it just it became a very awkward document to interpret. Mm-hmm.
Well, I had something to say, but I shouldn't. I was opposed to this new reporting became effective, and it was a tax. That's what it was all about. It started out as a tax, and it was either the city would be taxed, or the county would take it over tax as well. They would take the money and do what they wanted to do. And I've often wondered what happened to the money that the people pay for these services. Has anything ever been done to individual people who pay taxes to service water?
Yeah, you have clean streets, clean catch basins, and ditches that go downhill. And we also pay a whole bunch of money to the French Slough Drainage District to get rid of the water that falls in the city of Monroe.
Oh yeah, I mean, when the dikes break?
No. No, every day when the water goes down there, they have to pump it over the dike. Oh, so all the rainwater that sits, hits the city has to be pumped over the dike.
That's the way they're going to do it.
Yes.
Oh boy. All right. I guess there's no getting around it. It's a pretty little speed operation.
But the things on these silos.
Okay. They don't like it.
Any other comments?
You know, it's never has there been so much that you could do so little with.
I
was in the midst of answering one of Commissioner Demarest's questions when we kind of veered off.
Which one?
Where's the new stuff? Where's the old stuff?
Oh.
So basically, the old stuff starts on page 26.
It has a different font.
Different font, and it's all, basically you start over. If you look on page 28, it says, you know, requirement number one, minimum requirement number one,
right?
Which is that's was replaced by the new minimum requirement one.
It was shorter.
Yes, it was.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
I don't feel that there's a whole lot, well, let me rephrase it. I feel as if this is one of those items that there's not a whole lot that we can do with. This is a procedural matter. I think staff's comment about adopting this so that we're not in the worst position makes sense. Granted, Jeff, there's things in here that people won't like and cost them more money, but stormwater is an issue that we have to deal with, certainly. Because it does run downhill and it does affect other properties. And we see that in the city of Monroe today, where we have problems with inadequate stormwater. We talked about that in the past, and the need perhaps for some regional stormwater facilities as we move up out of the valley floor. So like it or not, it is a fact of life in the Northwest. And you know, I'm sure that it will continue to evolve over time, but I think that it's something obviously need to move forward with.
Yeah. Arizona would love to have this kind of tax.
Yeah, I agree with the formatting issue of the minimum requirements. I think if you use some good engineering ways of writing documentation, you can probably make that a lot easier to read. sometimes, at least when I was going to engineering school, I was taught to keep precise. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're an engineer, you want to be precise. You want somebody asks you a question like, "What kind of grade do you expect at the end of this course?" Mm-hmm. And if you sit down and write a couple paragraphs, what you expect to get at the end of the course, you usually fail. So I put down A.
Yeah.
So I got a thumbs up on that. But so if there's any way of minimizing the amount of verbiage and actually do some creative formatting, I think that could be a lot easier to read. So, Commissioner Sherman?
Is it possible that our code could be very brief and refer to their document rather than repeat it?
Because their document is addressed to everything we have to do, not what other people have to do. So.
It's got to be good. There's Texas A&M University online rainfall erosivity calculator was used, so it's got to be good. Commissioner Rod.
Brad, is there any movement to do something different than Olympic for this?
I'm sure there are people. I mean, there's lots of talk going on with Department of Ecology. There is every legislative bulletin that comes from the Association of Washington Cities talks about this. So they talk about it a lot. Nothing has happened so far. It's one of those unfunded mandates that you know they talk about that the state says you have to do something, but they don't provide you any funding for it.
Yeah.
So it's been talked about at Olympia, but nothing's progressed to make it not so onerous.
Can we push it a little bit?
You could make a recommendation to the city council that they make that a policy issue.
Commissioner Demers?
I suspect that this has, for lack of better words, been built on the best available science. Mm-hmm. And until someone else comes up with something that they can arguably successfully claim is better best available science, this won't change. Mm-hmm. And for that to happen, someone's got to spend a lot of money.
Right.
And it won't be an individual city doing it, and it's not going to be the private sector doing it, probably. So. Wayne, I think we could certainly do something like that, but I think that there's, we'd truly be blowing the wind on that one.
Anything else, commissioners? Okay. Brad, do you have anything else?
I'm done. Nope, just have a public hearing on the 13th of May.
13th of May.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and now we'll move on to discussion with commissioners and staff. We'll start with staff. Brad, anything else?
Nope.
A couple things. We have hired a planner who will start on April 22nd. She is with the city of Oakdale. Has several years' experience in both the private sector and public sector. I think she'll be a great addition to the staff.
Oak Harbor.
I'm sorry, Oak Harbor. Oakdale.
Yeah, close.
We are planning to bring a draft scope of work for the 2015 comp plan update to our next meeting for some input and review. And actually, part of that, I think, will need to be some sort of process in the very beginning where we talk about things that just came up here tonight about, you know, what is envisioned for these UGA areas and other areas of the city. That'll be a first step toward getting a consultant team on board to take us through that process. And lastly, there is a short course in Salton next week. Next Tuesday, and Commissioner Dirksen had expressed some interest. And let me know if anyone else might be interested. It is next Tuesday night, a week from tomorrow, in Salton. Okay. I've been to one of those oh, soon after I got here. It's a good overview of the exactly what we're doing.
So. I agree. Anything else? Nope. That's it. Commissioner Rodler? Commissioner Dixon?
No.
Commissioner Sherwood?
No.
Commissioner Derringer?
Was there something else you wanted to say?
No.
Paul, your comment about the visioning. We had talked, you and I had talked, and I think actually the commission had talked some while back about a visioning statement for the city of Monroe. And it doesn't seem that we've got a very comprehensive one. And I refer you, I think, to the city of Duval's document, which really does talk about what the community envisions for their city going down the road, and a holistic approach. And I think it would be worthwhile to perhaps include that document or something like it for this body to look at. I think it is important. I know that there is a mantra that says the adventure begins here, but you know, that in and of itself, I don't think is much of a vision. And there may be some disagreement out there as to what it should really mean. And I think it would be nice to hear from the community as to what this community feels they would like to have to raise their kids in, and see perhaps their kids raise their kids in as we look 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road. I think I appreciate your comment about that. I think it's an important aspect of what we'll be doing in 2015. And I was just going to say I look forward to being part of that, but I'm going to rephrase that and say I would look forward to liking to be a part of that, but I will not be here. So I just wish you all well with that process. But I will certainly look forward to whatever we do between now and December 31st.
We, 20 years or better ago, we had Snohomish County tomorrow, which had a vision like that. And it was very interesting because we were, all the cities in the county got together. And it was kind of fun to do.
Was it productive?
Yes, it was. It didn't turn out anywhere like they thought it would, but.
I don't have anything else.
Okay, thank you. I don't have anything. Scott, I just thought I'd throw it out there in just case you had something.
No, I'm good. I'm just listening.
You're looking forward to May 13th, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. All right, Dan.
I did. I'm curious how the council, how receptive they were on the sign ordinance.
Yeah.
5-1. There were six of them there. 5-1, first reading. Main concerns were whether 10 years was too long for the grandfathering of signs, height on Highway 2, and the whatever you call that thing down there. The
522. The 45.
Yeah. 45 foot, and digitalness.
Of which we have a new one I see on Highway 2 that's flashing and doing fireworks and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
In front of the buzzer.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So first reading 5-1, probably going to be passed then as it stands.
Yes. The comment was, it's not perfect, but the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah.
And the other comment was that sign codes are sort of like asking your kids where they want to go to dinner, and you get five different answers. So.
Yeah.
That's good.
They want to do it one day. David.
Sorry, I just had a very quick clarification. Dave, on your question way back in the beginning and the minutes, that one line, did we finally decide that that's just a strikeout, or should I re-listen to the tape and try to clarify?
With regard to Mr. Sachs?
Yeah, I think it was the first of the two corrections you made.
I think the consensus was to strike.
Just to strike it? Okay.
That's correct. That's what I recall.
Yes, yes.
That's what I wrote down, but I wasn't sure. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 8:00. Yeah, wow.
You don't know what to do, okay?
Yeah. That's for sure.